Welcome everyone, Truth Seeker friends, to Earth Harmony Divinations. Today is Wednesday, September 17th, 2008. My name is Elizabeth Peter. Wow, I can hardly believe the show is approaching its one-year anniversary. This is our 15th live show, and I've been hosting it since about October, November of last year. Just a brief outline of what you can expect from Earth Harmony. My mission statement is simple. Let us focus on sharing joy, oneness, abundance, gratitude, self-awareness at all times. Be ethical and use intuition, not fear. Wow, what a magnificent symphony this is. Just a small segment from Beethoven's Ninth. I hope you enjoyed it. And like my guest today used this analogy of symphony in her book, I chose it to give us a galactic tone to our show today. And as it is in our galaxy, the cosmos we are all a part of is a one giant, magnificent symphony, friends. As you may know, a symphony is made up of a series of so-called movements. After all movements are played, at the very end of the symphony comes this great finale. During the finale, a little segment from each previously heard movement is included, even exaggerated, culminating in great harmonics. Well, friends, we just described our living universe. That's why I'm talking about this so much, and we are living in the last segment of this finale. And I use this analogy because our guest today also mentioned it in her book, The Mayan Code, and I am honored to have her on our show. She will speak in much better detail about this subject than I could ever do. So at the beginning of each show, we usually use the abundance intent. So I would like to invite you to all take a deep breath, and here goes. Let's focus on our third eye. Abundance intent. I focus on the holy high self within as the only source of my prosperity. I know this inner presence as the only activity in my fill-in-the-blank financial, personal, health, career, affairs, as it is the substance of all things visible. I trust in the principle of abundance in action within, and so it is. Today, as always, I would like to encourage you to call in any time. I invite your questions, especially for our wonderful guests. We have a lot to discuss. I wish we had 2 hours. Without further ado, I'm so honored and humbled to welcome Barbara Hand Clow, a great guardian of light, international Mayan elder, Cherokee record keeper, and author of 11 books. The latest, The Mayan Code, will be the subject of our discussion. And The Mayan Code is a perfect companion book to Carl Johan Kalman, The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness, which I use all the time, preach about it all the time on my shows. And this book shows how the time cycles of the calendar match important periods in the evolutionary data banks on Earth and the Milky Way galaxy. These stages of evolution are converging during the final stages of the calendar, the period between 1999 and 2011, the time we are in right now. So it is a very timely show. Hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Wonderfully. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking time out from your busy schedule, Barbara, to bring us such an important information about human consciousness as it is beautifully laid out by the ancient Mayans. There's so much to cover, so I would like to skip over a lot of material which is covered by both the Kalman book and your book, and just want to ask you to begin with, what compelled you to write the Mayan Code?
That's a good question. As you probably know, I was a publisher for Baron Company for 18 years and published many Mayan authors, including starting with The Mayan Factor by Jose Arguelles. And so I've been deeply involved in Mayan calendar research as an indigenous person and as a publisher and also as a writer. And so needless to say, as we get closer and closer to the end of the calendar, more and more we're obsessed, literally, with what this calendar might actually mean. And in my case, because I worked with so many different authors, that's what I was attempting to figure out. And so when Carl Kalman's book came to me for an endorsement for its 2004 publication, I finally felt that someone had finally figured out what's going on with the calendar and the implications of what Kalman has to say regarding human evolution and our future, of course, are just incredible. So the one issue with Kahneman in his first two books is he was a little bit difficult to understand because he's a biologist and he's a scientist. And I have a way of making complex material available to large audiences. So I contacted Carl and asked him if I could write a book working with his material plus my own understanding of evolution and consciousness. And fortunately, he's an absolutely amazing person. He just has no ego. He just wants to get going here, you know. So he and I collaborated, and the Mayan Code, Time Acceleration, and Awakening the World Mind is what I wrote about Carl Kahneman's work, plus a lot of my own work.
If I could ask you to make your sound go up a little bit higher, I'm not sure if we have very good sound.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, too.
Do you? Okay.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have been chosen to be one of the few international Mayan elders, and they are the keepers of the calendar, and its message to all of humanity. Do you think humanity is hearing this message?
Yes, I do, because, of course, I've been watching it ever since it started, recently, in the last 20 or 30 years. And if you go back to harmonic convergence and you look at the worldwide celebration of consciousness and celebration of new awareness, and then you go from 1987 up to the current moment, and the number of people who are interested in this information has just expanded exponentially. Like if you plug 2012 into your computer will practically break down. So there are many, many people on the planet now who are attempting to understand how it was that the Mayans could have understood the codes of evolution, and how they also could have understood that the apotheosis, the end point, is coming in 2011. I don't mean end of the world. It has nothing to do with the end of the world. It has to do with our species, the human species, achieving another step forward in evolution that is as great as the time when we were monkeys and then became bipedal, or when we became conscious humans 100,000 years ago. We're on the verge of a critical leap in our evolution. And, of course, then the question is, what could that critical leap be? And in my case, I believe that it's going to be what I call Homo Pacem, which would be the humankind as a peaceful species. So what I think is going on is that we're moving rapidly toward the point where we're going to solve the tension in the world and solve the violence, and we're going to become a peaceful species, which is a pretty radical thing to say, because we're talking about achieving this by 2011, 2012.
And, of course, this is a great subject, and without this having time to discuss all of the details, I would like to urge everyone to really pick up the book, and both the Mayan Code and the Kahneman book, and read those, because we're referring to a lot of details here, and I am just so impressed with all the astrological details, the archaeological research details that you have included in the book. Of course, the listeners can find information about both the books on your web pages, www.hencloud2012.com. And or you can just go to link up on my BBS web pages to your book. I also urge people to really look into these Mayan timelines and educate themselves, because it's amazing how world events that are underscored by in your book and in the Kahneman book are completely matching with what the Mayans have.
Right, and in my case, of course, I turned the manuscript for the Mayan Code into the publisher in 2006, and two chapters of the book cover what's happening in the world from 1999 through 2011. So naturally, the last 5 years of that are all an analysis of what's going to be happening based on the Kahneman theory. And so we've had 2 years now. What I did is I projected the book out to 2011 and attempted to, to forecast, basically, based on astrology plus Kahneman's theory, what would happen in 2007, 2008, 2009, even though I had to hand in the manuscript. And so I've been watching with bated breath, especially during 2008, because 2008, this summer, was the point in time where we should be seeing a significant shift toward peace, some actual visible things. And those are happening. What I've been doing on my website is I do an analysis of the new moon every month, and also the solstices and the equinoxes. And what I do is I keep on checking in relationship to the astrological cycles whether Kalamon is right or not. And so I've been cataloging all summer the movement toward peace on the planet, which is country by country, incredibly complex. Fortunately, we have seen a significant move toward peace. And boy, am I glad that happened, because I can't stand to catalog all this information anymore. But it's very exciting what's actually going on. And then, of course, going along with the movement toward peace is a rebalancing between East and West, which unfortunately involves a lot of financial difficulty. So we're right in the middle of a hotbed right now, but yes, it really shows up in the Mayan calendar.
We have a caller. Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Yes?
Hi, my name is Charles Upton, calling from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. You have a
Thank
question
you.
For Barbara?
Yes, I got a question for her. First of all, I'd like to say I've read the Palladian Agenda. I do have the Mayan code. And I guess when she gets a chance, she could speak a little bit about
this. I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
I can hear.
Wait,
can
turn
hear.
It off. Yeah, I'm having a lot of, I'm really straining.
Can't hear me?
Yeah, a little better.
Okay. I wonder if she could talk a little bit about the cataclysm that took place 9,500 years ago.
9,500 B.C.
So yeah, 9,500
like
B.C.,
11,500
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. My 2001 book is called Catastrophobia, and which is what you're referring to. And the reason I wrote Catastrophobia is basically, as a writer and researcher, I'm working with very, very high human potential and with a very, very positive attitude toward where we're headed. But the problem is there's such a big differential between where I think we're headed versus where we are. And so all the way through my career, I kept asking myself, what's wrong with the human species? And I came to the conclusion in Catastrophobia that we are a multi-traumatized species because of a cataclysm 11,500 years ago. And so my basic theory is that we are healing at this point. We're right in the middle of healing our planet and our species from this cataclysm, and also the survivor period afterwards. And one of the reasons it's so difficult right now is because the intensity of the healing is like almost too much for people.
Thank you so much for calling in. I hope you enjoy the show.
Yes. Thank you very much.
So to speed up to current times, as you're doing, this is basically the seventh day of all the previous layers, previous underworlds on our planet. Is that correct, Barbara?
What it is that all those 7 days come forth at a different point. Like regarding the 16.4 billion year cycle, the seventh day has been going on for about a million and a half years or billion and a half years or something like that. So what you're referring to is that we're in the middle of a major time acceleration, 1999 through 2011, where the time factor has speeded up radically. And the seventh day of that cycle will occur during 2011. So we're in the seventh day of like the previous cycle, which is 250 years long, and then the one before that, which is like 5,000 years long. And this is a great example of how complicated this material is. But fortunately, in my book and in Carl's book, because we have lots of diagrams and lots of illustrations, people seem to be able to grasp this material actually quite quickly and quite easily. And I think that's probably also because they resonate with it. The minute they get in touch with it, they can like feel the truth of this material like right in the solar plexus.
Mm-hmm. So you also mentioned how scientists are starting to resonate with it. On page 96, you're saying, mysteriously, cosmologists discovered in 1998 that the expansion of the universe was suddenly speeding up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's when we really felt the shift that we were speeding up 20 times again, starting in 1999,
mm-hmm.
and that is the galactic age we're in at the moment.
And you know, Elizabeth, I'd like to put in a word here about this issue of what's happening with science. What is happening with our planet and our solar system and our universe right now and galaxy is just incredibly exciting. And unfortunately, because the Bush administration has cut back on the public education of science and the networking of science to such an extreme degree, people are not able to realize what's happening right now. When you really know what's actually going on right now, there's so much reason to be optimistic in the middle of a very hard time.
And that is why I decided to do this show. I think the planetary underworld, like Kalaman puts it so well, is doing its best to you know, express as much power, maximize their power to the
yes.
to the top. And that's where we are in this dichotomy of yet there's this beautiful message there, and yet we are still very oppressed.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing you're pointing out here, because one of the things I said many times is that the what I call the global elite, the world management team, the powers that be, they know all about the Mayan calendar. When the Spaniards went into Mesoamerica, they got a hold of all the codices, and they destroyed like just unbelievable amounts of material regarding the Mayan calendar. But number one, who says they destroyed it? Like, some of it has already turned up in libraries and in the Vatican. And so one of the reasons it took the calendar researchers, such as myself, to figure out what was going on with this calendar is because most of the data had been taken away. And so as I watched the powers that be, I think they know exactly what's going on right now. And I think the reason that they're running such an intense program, especially a media and education program to keep people from thinking, is because they know that we as a species can awaken now. And as we as a species awaken, it's not going to be so easy to control everybody. It's not going to be
so easy.
Well,
that's why we have amazing light workers like yourself, and
yeah.
I think that the critical mass that we are living in right now is just reaching that point of no return, where the light workers that are on our planet, who are waking up massive amounts of human beings, are finally reaching a point where maybe we can override this.
Dan, I don't know if we're going to override it as a group. I think what's happening is people are just waking up all over the place. Like, for example, basically 2 months ago, al-Maliki, the president of Iraq, basically made it plain. He just wants the Americans out.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans came in and created a mess. And if you look at the situations all around the planet, especially this summer, you'll see a significant change. For example, there's a real movement toward peace in Israel right now that's coming out of Jenin, which is an area of the West Bank where there was such destruction of Palestinian life. And it's coming right out of the heart of the conflict. And basically, the peacemakers in Jenin are saying, let's get rid of making peace from the top down and having other countries tell us how to do treaties. Let's just make peace right in the community. And so I think it's like an awakening all over the place. And the light workers are just a small part of that. And that's just a group of people such as yourself or me. We just happen to understand the whole thing intellectually. But people can understand in their hearts what's going on.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You know what, for those of us who are not that familiar with the calendar, can you explain them a little bit better? What is this about the 20 times faster? You know, how does the time speeding up so
yeah.
much?
Yeah, this is the most complicated part of it. And what the calendar is showing, the calendar actually covers trillions of years. But the part of the calendar that we have a reading on, it goes back to 16.4 billion years ago. And so anybody who knows cosmology knows that the physicists believe that the universe started somewhere, some say 13 billion years ago, some say 14, some say 15. But this number is very close to that. And so when we look at that number, most of us think that that's the actual number for the creation of the universe. And then, as you know, around 4 billion years ago, our solar system accreted, and we had the first formation of the planetary systems. So in the middle of this 16.4 billion years of time, there are 9 time accelerations. And what that means is the next cycle is 820 million years long. And so if you divide 820 million years long into 16.4 billion years, 820 million years is 1/20th of that. So it's just a mathematical thing.
Okay.
But, you know, but when we look at this 820 million year cycle, the divisions of the 820 million years exactly match the dating for the evolution of mammals on the planet, the evolution of life forms on the planet. And this is something that was discovered by Kalaman, who is a biologist. And people are going to have to, you know, check all those details to see if it resonates, because as a matter of fact, the comparison is absolutely dramatic. But what most people can understand more easily is that the seventh, or I guess the sixth time acceleration is 5,125 years ago. And if you look at the planet 5,125 years ago, suddenly civilization shows up in Sumeria, in Egypt, in China, in Mesoamerica, and there was a distinctive speed up in human cultures on the planet, which most people recognize immediately. Then the next time acceleration is 1755 to 2011 AD. And that one represents the age of industry. Kalaman calls it the planetary underworld, but it's the time when civilizations on the planet became industrial and also developed more advanced communication. So then the next time acceleration after that is 1999. And this is called the galactic underworld, because from 1999 to 2011 AD, we're actually entering the consciousness of the galaxy. And if people tune into it, they'll realize that suddenly in the late 1990s, they started to understand their location in the galaxy. They started to understand the galaxy and the universe itself. And so each one of these underworlds or divisions is 1/20th as long as the previous one, and each one of them is going 20 times faster. And so if you tune into it, you can feel, if you go back to 1999, for most people, suddenly things started speeding up so fast that they basically just could barely cope with it. And this was a distinctive time change from the development of industry and the development of business cycles and all that on the planet. And then, according to the calendar, we're going to speed up 20 times faster in February 2011. And so one of the reasons that I'm working so hard as a teacher and as an person being interviewed to disseminate this information is, let's say that this is true, that we're going to go 20 times faster in 2011 than we were in 1999 up to now. Well, if that's true, we've got a lot of preparation to do for that. And so I just mainly work on helping people understand what's actually happening.
Yes, in fact, in your book, The Pleiadian Agenda, which you wrote in 1995, you mentioned that you had channeled information from the Pleiadians who alerted you to this shift that's happening in 98-99. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. The Pleiadian Agenda, A New Cosmology for the Age of Light, is my only channel book. All of my other books have come out of what I consider to be basically left-brain research, although I'm also very intuitive in terms of directions that I take. But in 1994, a whole cosmological data bank came through me, and it was so complicated and so much. See, I didn't understand cosmology and physics and string theory and quantum mechanics and all that stuff back in 1995. Now I do. But I didn't at the time, and so the only thing that I could do was channel the book, which meant I called together a group of people who had the ability to question me about these topics. And I channeled 18 sessions that lasted about 3 hours, and then I took those 18 sessions and made them into a book called The Pleiadian Agenda, because the beings who channeled it through me said they were Pleiadians. And this was actually a difficult experience for me, because I would rather be fully conscious and not channel, number one. Mm-hmm. And then number two, the facts are, I wrote a book that I didn't understand myself. Mm-hmm. I just had to trust the material and write it up as a book. Because at Baron Company, I was a structural editor. I can make a book out of anything. But it was pretty bizarre to go out and teach a book in 1995, 96, 97 that I didn't understand. But what I was doing was, once I started to go out and teach it, first of all, a lot of the students were scientists, and they taught me a lot about what was coming through in this book. And then also I went into an intensive study of all of the material in the book. And so by 2003, another thing that was happening, Elizabeth, is as I was teaching this material, some of the theories in the book were being proven by science. In other words, the Pleiadian agenda has a whole bunch of new theories in it that weren't correct according to science back in 1995. So, of course, as I went along and studied science and started to see that science was proving this material, it gave me greater confidence in the importance of this material. So I wrote a book in 2004 called Alchemy. Let's see, Alchemy, I can remember it. Alchemy of Nine Dimensions. And Alchemy of Nine Dimensions is a scientific proof of a channeled book, which is really
I will definitely want to read that book,
because it's
probably going to be very timely. But I do believe that we all get channeled and we get downloaded information. Even the scientists themselves, I'm sure that some of the discoveries that just come to us may not just pop out from thin air.
Yeah, there's no question about
that. We're just not aware of it.
I think even Einstein admitted that, you know, when it came to relativity theory. But then what happened, okay, in 2004, I published a scientific analysis of my own channel book, but there was only one thing missing that still is missing in Alchemy. I may be able to revise it. What's missing in Alchemy is, as of 2004, I did not understand what the ninth dimension meant. Because nobody could figure it out. And the ninth dimension, according to Alchemy, is time, and the keeper of the ninth dimension is Zolkin. And Zolkin, of course, is the Mayan calendar. Well, I understood, so I knew what Zolkin was, and I knew what the Mayan calendar was. But what I couldn't figure out is how time could be coming from such a high dimension. And then Carl Kalman's manuscript came to me, which is positing that time is the actual driver of evolution, which is, after all, the driver of all of the agendas we're dealing with. And finally, as a result of Kalman's material, I understood the ninth dimension. So the Mayan code really is like almost like the completion of Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, where it explores the ninth dimension.
Mm-hmm. So time, when you say time, you mean galactic time, not our linear
time. It's not like clock
time. Yeah.
And the way it came through in the Pleiadian agenda and in Alchemy and in the Mayan code is that time is the driving force of moving forward in the universe. And then the time codes deposit into the divine mind. Now, the eighth dimension is the divine mind or God, goddess, whatever you prefer calling it. And so what I'm saying is that these time agendas are in a higher dimension than even the divine mind. Now, that's not saying they're better or greater, but it's just that the time codes are like in the universe, and then they feed the divine mind with the agendas of time. So this is a very, very high dimension. Like if we go into the consciousness of God, then according to the Pleiadian agenda, the dimension below that is the seventh dimension, and that's the dimension of sacred sound. And then if we go into the sixth dimension, it's the dimension of sacred geometry. Then the fifth dimension, the world of the heart. Now, scientifically speaking, we have machines like the cymatics machine, which will show you how sound actually makes geometry.
Wow, we'll have to have an extra show just on that.
Yeah, well, it's great stuff. It's really fun.
Stuff, yeah. So here we are closing in on the fifth night, while on August 15th, just to give us a great glimpse of hope, the fourth and final world begins. So how will this fourth world change things? And you kind of alluded to that earlier.
Yeah,
how will that change things for us?
Yeah, this is a great question, because one of the most subtle things, and I think the most difficult thing to understand in the Mayan code, is the issue of the worlds of the Mayan calendar, as well as all these cycles of time. So in the middle of all of these cycles of time going along and creating change, we have the Mayan understanding of the world mind and the worlds. And the easiest way to understand the sense of the worlds would be the following thing. We just entered the fourth world of the galactic underworld on August 15th, the summer. And the fourth world is the completion of a whole process. But the question would be, well, what is this process? You know, you can have a sense of this time coding being kind of like almost like a physical thing, like a rhythm in the universe. I think most people understand that. But the worlds are fascinating because the worlds, the closest analogy I can give to these worlds would be our subconscious mind. And some of your listeners are familiar with Jungian psychology. And the idea would be that we're living in a world where there is a collective mind or a subconscious mind, and that mind contains all of the feelings and thoughts of every human on the planet. And I'm using humans because, like plants and dogs and cats, they don't have to think about whether we should invade Iraq or not. This world of thought and this world of emotions is a human world. And so what goes on with the Mayan understanding of this, and this is so fascinating because I watched it happen this summer and I went, can this be real? And what happened was the subconscious mind at this point, as of the opening of the fourth world, August 15th, has shifted to peace.
Uh-huh.
And so suddenly, subconsciously and collectively, people, one after another, are going, this is crazy. You know, like, we cannot continue this way. It doesn't. You don't have to have an IQ of 10 to know that it can't continue like this. But the trick of it is that once the subconscious mind changes, that's, like, where the manifestation starts to come in. It's kind of like the whole issue of manifestation and, like, using visualization.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like once the inner mind changes, the outer world starts to transform.
That's like a beautiful wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to Kalaman, he was so nice to give us some hope there. In his book, it says, around August 15th, 08, things will begin to move much more smoothly for those seeking the enlightened path.
Yes.
At that point, some minor expressions of the next and final universal age will have already began to manifest. And I felt that. I felt jubilating in August.
Yeah.
It was not only because of the two, you know, eclipses on top of everything, but just it was just the most phenomenal month.
Yeah, and how would you like the way the astrology... Now, see, I combine another element here because I'm also an astrologer. So what I did with this book was I said, okay, this is what Kalaman says, this is what the calendar says. But what I did was I added astrology. And the reason that astrology is important is astrology is what creates human potential. So like in a given astrological field, it's easier or harder to accomplish something. And so what I couldn't believe this summer, and I don't look ahead that far because I'm so busy working on what I'm working on right now, you know.
Uh-huh.
But when I saw that during the month of August 08, when we entered the fourth world, that we would have three eclipses, and then when I saw the significance of those eclipses, because they were incredible,
uh-huh,
I just went, my God, this is amazing. It's like this, we're in the middle of this amazing, you know, like cosmic symphony, like Beethoven.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So now, of course, I'm just so I'm so excited because we're headed up into the sixth day, and yet we still have a showdown to come here. I know there will be a huge showdown just between now and November. Astrologically, Barbara, I mean, don't you think this is going to be an interesting little showdown between the play of the planets and the completion of the fifth night just around November?
Yes, absolutely.
How would you anticipate that?
Well, first of all, the main transit on November 4th is the first opposition of Saturn to Uranus. Now, Saturn-Uranus oppositions create revolutionary change. And so the last time we had Saturn opposite Uranus was in 1965-66. And this is what really kicked off the 60s and kicked off the radical level of change in the 60s. And even if listeners aren't old enough, they've heard about it even if they didn't experience it. And it was amazing how fast things changed in the late 60s. So first of all, the same aspect is going to be occurring on Election Day, November 4th, 2008, and the first one, because there's going to be five of them in from 2008 through 2010. And they will change the very fabric of culture. Nothing will stop this. It's always a period of radical change. But the interesting thing to do is to look at it astrologically. And the way you want to look at an opposition is like the full moon, where two planets are opposite, Saturn opposite Uranus. And so just like the full moon, that's the ultimate manifestation and fruition of that force. So in order to figure it out, you got to go back to the conjunction before the opposition. It's like if you want to figure out the full moon, you have to analyze the new moon. Are you following me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we go back to the conjunction of Saturn, the most recent conjunction of Saturn, Uranus, we're back in 1987, 1988. And what happened, first of all, was harmonic convergence and the first real large understanding of the Mayan factor. Uh-huh. And the other thing that happened in 1987, 1988, is that Saturn conjuncted Uranus three times right on the galactic center. And I think a lot of people have forgotten about this.
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten because the energy was so cosmic and so awesome that I could hardly stand still. You know, and so to tell you the truth, we've been having Pluto transiting the galactic center for the last couple of years, and it's now moving off and it's going to go into Capricorn. And so the Plutonic force last year and this year has been really opening up our contact with the galactic center.
Yeah.
But also what's happening on Election Day and then in 2009-2010 is the manifestation and completion of these Saturn-Uranus conjunctions on the galactic center. You know? So, wow.
So the Saturn-Uranus, we could call them the drums and the you know, big instruments in the symphony finale.
Oh, yeah. Well,
when
Saturn
they're hitting
rules,
in there,
Saturn rules structure and form,
sound.
And then Uranus rules transformation and change.
Yeah.
And so whenever they're working together like that, either in conjunction or opposition, it's almost like they're having, it's like a battle. It's almost like some of it's in Greek mythology with the children of Saturn and Uranus and some of those wonderful stories.
And we don't even want to go into what that means in terms of our financial markets.
It's for the most part, at least in the United States, the issue is financial.
I think it's global. You don't believe?
Yeah, it is global. But what I mean is that no matter what happens here, the United States is going to suffer more than anybody else.
Really?
And the reason for that is because America has been attempting to be the world global empire for the last 50 years, and it's not going to happen. And so what seems to be collapsing the power of the United States seems to be financial.
Right.
These are the kind of details I track on my website in detail. And it's all free. You can just dial it up and look at it. And so I've been saying all summer that about probably the worst thing that could possibly happen to the United States as well as anybody else in the world would be if the Americans invaded Iran. Haven't we already seen enough, you know?
Exactly.
And so what happened is right at the point of the entry into the Fourth World with the eclipse August 15th, what happened at that point was it no longer became possible to invade Iran.
And, exactly.
The price of oil went up so high that basically the Iranians were just taking their money to the bank. And it became unfeasible. And even though the financial collapse is very, very difficult and it's going to get more difficult, nothing could be worse than just a worldwide war explosion, you know?
Yeah, but don't you think that the sixth day is a hopeful day according to the timelines of Kalaman?
Don't I think what is?
The sixth day coming up?
Oh, yeah. So the sixth day of the calendar of the Galactic Underworld starts November 12th. And as you probably know, Pluto goes into Capricorn on November 27th also. And so one of the things that I think is kind of hard to read right now is as soon as we go into the sixth day, we're going to have a very positive wave of consciousness. And I believe that's going to be true because I've been watching it earlier when it has happened. But the question would be, it's hard to read the election in a sense because we won't have that wave of optimism at the time of the election.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's possible that people will fall into fear and confusion. But who wins the election is not going to determine what's going to happen here.
No, I think that people will wake up to the fact that we cannot give our power to anyone, any leader,
yeah,
but it has to remain within us.
And yeah, that's a good way to put it. I really like that. What November 12th...
It will be a huge wake-up call.
Yeah, is going to be for people to realize they can't give their power away. That's very good, Elizabeth, because if they have, in a sense, given their power away by bringing in the wrong candidate, if that's what happens, and I'm not going to say who's right and who's wrong, then they will realize they've given their power away, even if they did give their power away.
Yeah, it will be the end of powers, period, because we will have our own individual selves to rely on from then on out.
Yeah.
So that lesson has to be learned, hard or not. It has to be learned.
Yeah.
So that showdown could manifest that kind of subconscious, like you mentioned. So I'm very, very hopeful that, although it's a hard lesson for all of us, including me, you know, if we go with the fear, that could become problematic,
Yeah, the fear, going with the fear is always an issue. And then one of the things, I just finished writing the fall equinox, that reading, because that gets posted on the website. And one of the things, I don't want to talk about which candidate is the right candidate, because this is a collective mind issue. And of course, I have my own opinion, but it doesn't matter. But what I suggested to people in my fall equinox reading is that they attempt to view what the candidates are saying from the point of view of what they believe is good for the country. In other words, to watch out for voting for somebody because you identify with them. There seems to be such a strong theme right now that you're supposed to, people are so happy because they can identify with somebody. Like
exactly.
Moms can
well,
identify.
Well, again, people are like little children giving away their power to some big daddy who will take care of everything.
Yeah.
Just unfortunately.
No, but it's even worse
than
that. I think it's the media influence over the last 50 years that has kind of conditioned people to feel that they're on when they're identifying with something. You know
and that
I mean?
Is so hard to come back from.
Yeah, and so I think people have to really pull back now and watch out for that, because identifying with somebody doesn't have anything to do with whether they're a good candidate or not.
I have great faith in the youth in the 30-something. They are totally on a different mindset, I believe. At least a great majority of them are, because it is showing how they really started to wake up to Ron Paul's message, who talks about the Constitution. And even though Ron Paul is not effective as a candidate, he was very effective with giving out the message that we need to go with back to the basics of the Constitution, and that's when we can finally start to rebuild things from. And so I believe that that's what the 6 days is going to be about. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I really like that as a definition. I think it's a good one.
So now the acceleration is getting more intense as we enter the year 2011 pretty soon. And that's I'm
having a little bit of trouble hearing
yeah,
you
again. Yeah, I'm sorry. I hope that once the archive is finished, they're going to increase the sound on this.
Yeah.
The acceleration is getting more and more intense as we enter the year 2011, the universal layer, when that's the final layer. I can't even imagine to be that highly accelerated.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah.
I think that the key, I mean, the issue is what do you do now about that? And I'm going through just amazing levels of dietary and exercise change and all this kind of stuff, kind of like strengthening my physical body even more so, because I think there's going to be like such a high level of resonation that in 2011 it'll be almost like just constant kundalini energy, you know?
Total telepathy. Now, there is a disagreement among the Mayan calendar scholars about the ascension date, or I don't know what you would call it. It's, you know, between October 20, 2011, that was Kalaman's calculation, as opposed to 2012, December 21st, 2012. Now, you take a very wise position, and you basically agree with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Kalaman has changed the date slightly, and that's extremely important because as we come to that last final ninth underworld acceleration, whether it occurs in 2011 or 2012 is really important. So first of all, I look at it as an astrologer also and as a cosmologist, and I can see how the galactic synchronization energy in 2012 and the equinoxes and solstices are a big part of the completion of the calendar. And so what I feel is going on is that I think Kalaman is tracking the idea that the acceleration itself needs to be finished in 2011 in order to handle the power of the energy in 2012.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of how I look at it. And then another piece of the puzzle that I think is kind of interesting is that in my own work before the Mayan Code, like back with alchemy and back with Pleiadian agenda, I kept on pointing out that there was a gigantic shift in the planetary field in August of 1998. Now, some of the Mayan calendar researchers talk about the alignment of our galaxy, of our solar system with the galaxy according to the solstices and equinoxes. And astronomically speaking, scientifically speaking, the peaking of the alignment with the galaxy was May of 1998. And some people are trying to make it look like it's December 21st, 2012. It's just not true scientifically. Mm-hmm. So the reason I think that's such an important issue is, first of all, in May of 1998, there were significant changes to the planet Earth. The planet developed a bulge at the equator, and suddenly the land suppression from the ice age at the poles shifted, and the land actually started rising at the north and south pole.
Wow.
Now, this could be the cause of the polar, of the melting of the polar ice.
The global warming. So
yeah.
They could be totally misinterpreting.
Yeah, so people are really, really missing this one. And then, now I was harping on this back in the 90s because I thought it was going to be such a significant thing. But if you think about Carl Kalaman's timing, he says that the eighth acceleration, the galactic acceleration, started January 1st, 1999. Which means that that particular acceleration started right after the Earth shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the Earth needed to go through that kind of geometrical spatial shift in order for this next level of acceleration to occur. So there's a wonderful combination of cosmology and the calendar right there. So people have the impression of a lot of in-group fighting, you know, going on, and there is some fighting going on, but I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So it turns out, it seems that when there is a shift in consciousness, there's also physical manifestations happening on the planet itself.
Yeah, that's right.
As the planet is a living organism. So what would be your final message to us, Barbara? Do you think things are going well? Will humanity make it? Because there's a lot of very pessimistic scholars, even some of the Mayan scholars are extremely pessimistic.
Yes.
Will humanity follow the light? Can we make it into the higher dimension?
I absolutely believe we will. And one of the things, I'm not as strong on what I'm going to say next as Kalaman is. Kalaman just almost embodies a sense of a divine plan that is going to go forward no matter what anybody does, you know what I mean? I tend to just, it isn't so much an analytical thing for me. I have seen so much positive change. Now I'm 65 years old, and I've been a teacher since I was about 40, so I've been in this a long time. I have seen so much growth and so much consciousness change and so much heart opening on the part of people on the planet and in some cases my students that I know we're going to make this thing. You know. And then the other piece that I put into the Mayan Code at the end, in the Mayan Code, Chapter 8 is all about Christ consciousness and angelic consciousness, because it was really finally time to write about that.
Uh-huh.
And so I got into the issue of how the angels incarnate into our species in order to bring us forward from an evolutionary point of view. And I analyzed some really wonderful data about the Enochian angels and things that might have happened 50,000 years ago.
Oh, yes, I didn't have time to ask about that. Yeah.
You know, just the idea of a high consciousness angel like incarnating into the mind of a body of a Neanderthal, for example. But it's happening.
If I may quote from this passage that you put so beautifully on page 212, during the universal underworld in AD 2011, the blood of Christ will quicken in the veins of all humanity, and love will be the greatest force on earth. Mothers and fathers will refuse to send their progeny to war because their children are Christ. Wars will cease because people will see they don't need religion to be in communion with the divine. I like that passage so
much. I like that a lot, too. I actually read that sometimes to groups. You know, and what I was going to say there is The involution of angels, the incarnation of angels into our species is happening right now, and they're called the indigo children.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Whenever I lose hope, and I lose hope a lot, you know, I live in a big city and I see a lot, you know, but I just go look at them into the faces and the eyes of children.
Yes.
And our species is changing.
Yes. They don't even know what we're worried about.
Yeah, exactly right. But
as long as they don't get sucked into the current powers structures, you know, the money structure and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Some do. I mean, I see that sometimes in my child, but I think the original message will shine through.
Yes, I do too.
When the time comes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what would be what would you like to add to what I haven't asked you about so far?
The only thing I'd like to add is people, of course, are really freaking out over the financial situation, and I'm old enough to have known people who went through the last depression. And when I was a kid, I used to ask them what it was like. And everybody I talked to said that people were closer, things were warmer, there was greater community on level of communication. And so I think if people go through this thing, I think you've got to turn around and start trading and start working with people and start working with groups. And I really think that you know, the Americans, in the United States, I live in Canada, in Canada it's the same. We have so much stuff. We have so much furniture and so many clothes and all that. I mean, if you go back to the Depression, people didn't have all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think we can get along if we just start sharing and helping each other out.
Yeah.
So it's not worth freaking out about, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, we need to really start practicing detachment from things and even these dramas, I call them the love dramas and the attachments to various emotions that are holding us back,
yeah,
and physical things, like you said.
Mm-hmm. And this is a time, detachment's a really great word, because the Saturn-Uranus oppositions are going to create a tremendous wave of kind of frenzied-type energy. And it is possible to be detached in the middle of that, and it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who are losing their homes at the moment, you know, they are learning that lesson right now. Yeah. Unfortunately, our linear time is zipping up fast. There is so much more I wanted to cover. So do you think, Barbara, you could agree to come back at a future time again?
Yeah, I'd love to come back. And maybe we can do it around the time of December 12th.
That would be wonderful.
I know I'm teaching a workshop that weekend in Bellingham, but maybe right after that we could get on the phone and talk about, you know, what it feels like to be in day six, because I think it's going to feel really great.
I would love to talk more about your other books as well. It was such an honor, Barbara. I'm very grateful for the time you spent with us today.
Thank you.
On this bright harvest full moon day, I feel very fortunate that we had a chance to uncover so much truth about our visit here on this lovely planet. Thank you so much indeed. Again, please visit the website for more information on today's subject and on the incredible life work of Barbara Hand-Clough at www.henclough2012.com. Dear friends, let us finish this incredible time with the usual closing gratitude intent. Let's take a deep breath. I'm grateful, and I know now that there is nothing that I could truly desire that is not at this very moment standing at the door of my consciousness, ready to appear in my life and affairs. I have only to be conscious of this truth, and every need is met, every problem solved, every question answered. My consciousness of the holy high self within is all I will ever need for all eternity. And so it is. Friends, our next show will air live on Wednesday, October 1st at 2 p.m. Please check the web pages for details on upcoming shows or visit the Earth Harmony Archives if you missed any of our programs. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Elizabeth, checking out. Till we meet again next time, have a great harvest fall. Blessed be all. Now let the music keep our spirits high. Let the buildings keep our children dry. Let creation reveal its secrets. By and by. By and by. When the light is lost within us.
after the deluge. Let the music keep our spirits high.